You're listening to Trek FM.
Maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey. To the journey.
Hello, everybody at home. This is To the Journey.
To the journey.
I am your co-host, Tristan Riddell, and with me, as always, is...
Charlene Schmidt and...
Lori Sears.
Tonight, we have one of my favorite type of episodes, and we've been doing it more and more, and that's kind of our 1-3 ranking episodes. But this one has a little bit of a spin. This one is top three episodes that we would want to show non-fans of Star Trek and or non-fans of, specifically, Star Trek Voyager. And we all know that Star Trek Voyager gets a bad rap out there. I mean, there's a lot of people who think it's the kind of the redheaded stepchild of the Star Trek universe. I and you guys definitely disagree.
Definitely.
Oh, yeah.
I think that this is an episode where we can shed some light and give some advice to people out there asking the question, hey, I have a friend / significant other who doesn't like, who think they don't like Star Trek Voyager, or think that they don't like Star Trek, and I would like to start them out right. We all have three episodes for you each. That's a culmination of 9 if we don't have any overlaps.
I want to preface every selection with the thought that episodes that you would maybe show to somebody who's new to the series or even Star Trek are not necessarily our favorite episodes.
Yes.
Right.
Because as I was coming up with my list, I found it very painstaking to come up with this list. It seems like an easy idea, much harder in practice, because I thought about my favorite episodes and I would get really excited about that. Like, yeah, that's a great one. Wait a minute. No, a new person's not going to understand who so-and-so is or what's happened to so-and-so and why they're going to feel this way in this episode. So these selections are not necessarily favorite episodes. They're just really good ones to bring somebody in.
Sure. Give us your number one. Not necessarily your best one, but just one that you'd like to talk about.
I think a good place to start would be Future's End.
Oh.
Okay.
And I chose this one because you are dealing with a more contemporary time. Most of us have lived through 1996. We remember what it was like.
Not everybody listening, maybe.
There's probably a couple younger members of the listening audience out there who weren't alive in 1996, but a vast majority of us do at least remember some things about 1996, or just we could even broaden it to the 90s, okay? Just to the decade. So this is the fun one where they go back to 1996 Los Angeles, and there's all sorts of crazy things happening, and it talks a little bit about the computer revolution, which... I'm sorry, computers are extremely prevalent in our culture. So this is kind of a fun thing. It gives, I would say, somebody with no knowledge of Star Trek some very common ground to build off of. And then you, from that base, you can incorporate the sci-fi elements, the character elements of who everybody is, the Starship Voyager, and all that. So for that reason, I chose this one. What do you guys think?
Well, yeah. I think that would be a good one. Like you said, for the reasons you gave, that it's contemporary. There's elements there that everybody can relate to in one way or another. Yeah, I think it's a good idea.
Yeah, I think time travel is always something that kind of reels people in. It's a common sci-fi element that a lot of people identify with, whether they're Star Trek fans or not, because you don't have to... There's many plots out there where you don't have to think too hard to grasp time travel. It's just, okay, they went back in time. Bam.
Right.
Okay, they got it. Like, it's not something like Tuvix where you have to say, like, no, you have a transporter and then their molecules, you know, disintegrate and then they combine back together. Not saying Tuvix would be a bad example, but it's a much more complicated device than just straight up, okay, they went back in time like Marty McFly.
As far as the technobabble goes, yeah, the suspension of disbelief, yeah, you're making a leap here, but I think it's something that works. Like you said, this is something that's not new to a general audience. It happens all the time in movies and TV. It's nothing different now. So you got that. That's fine. And also, hey, it worked in Star Trek IV. That's one of the most popular and highly regarded general audience Trek films out there.
Yeah, and if they ever have heard of Star Trek, they have definitely heard of Star Trek IV, i.e. the one with the whales.
Right. So. That's right. Star Trek, whales.
Star Trek, whales, exactly. Lori, lay it on us.
Well, along the same lines of a weird sci-fi concept, I chose Blink of an Eye because I thought
that was one of mine too.
Sorry. All
right, we'll talk about it together.
Okay. Yeah. Yes. Well, I thought the sci-fi concept really just grabs you, and everybody knows the rotation of a planet determines your time and all that. So just the fact that you come across this planet that spins so much faster than ours. I mean, God, I can't even imagine. That's pretty cool. And the fact that they're sitting up there and they start affecting the whole planet and everything that's going on, and they make them some sort of mythological gods, the ship becoming a mythological god. I thought that was interesting. And they got to see the whole development of the planet. That was really cool.
Yeah. It's got some great sci-fi concepts in it.
It does.
Yeah, I picked this one first for a specific reason of... Like, I picked mine in a specific order. Like, not only do I think these are my top three to show them, but I feel like I chose the order. Like, you're going to say, like, okay, we're going to sit down and we're going to watch three episodes. Mm-hmm. And the first one being Blink of an Eye, because exactly what you said, Lori, it's a fantastic sci-fi concept. It grips people in, and it's not really something that you've ever seen before.
Mm-mm.
And I feel like it focuses more on how the crew deals with this situation rather than the crew itself. And I feel like that's a great way to ease people into Voyager because, okay, like, you don't have to know anything about these characters' lives beforehand. You just get to see them react to what's going on beneath them.
True.
And that way there's no racking of the brain. There's no, like, you have to sit next to them and say, like, okay, this is Tom Paris. He has a troubled past, and he did this, this, and this. And this is B'Elanna. She's half Klingon and half human. I'll explain what a Klingon is later. You know, you don't have to do any
right.
of that
no.
with this episode. It's just like, this is the crew of the Voyager, and this is how they deal with this situation. And the episode explains itself, and you get some great performances, especially from Daniel Day-Kim.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I'm a sucker for great guest stars, so that's why I chose number one.
Cool.
That's a good choice, you guys. I like
that
one a lot.
That loops us right back around, since Laurie and I have to share
our
number three spot. Okay, so Char, give us your next one.
Okay, the next one I thought about was a personal favorite of mine, Eye of the Needle.
Hmm.
Early season
yeah.
one, it's the one where they find the teeny little wormhole, make contact with the Romulan guy from 20 years in the past. And I feel like it's early enough in the series to where the characters, you don't have to know a whole lot about them. They're still pretty raw. They're new. But this is about Voyager's journey home, and it is the first, six episodes in, story about will they get home? How will they get home? I mean, that really is the essential goal of Voyager right there. So why not introduce this as that kind of a story? And I think it's a very well-written story. It's one of my favorites, as I said. So I would go with this one.
I think it also is a good one because it introduces the plight of the Doctor and his relationship with the crew.
Mm.
Yes.
With that guy who's constantly working out so hard.
Yeah.
You know,
that
he just
jerk.
Yeah, he ignores the Doctor. He treats him like he's a piece of technology. And then Janeway's like, but he is a piece of technology. And so we see the attitudes of the crew. And so not only does it have a great main storyline, but it also has a great character-driven B-plot, which I think is really great.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes. That was definitely a good thing. And very important to the Voyager story as time goes by. Think about all that happens with the Doctor. Compare
right.
this story, say, to Author.
Oh, yeah.
You would totally be lost if you tried to watch that one.
That's a drastic change.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yes.
And also, the guest star is Vaughn Armstrong, which is a veteran of Star Trek and also probably most famous in Enterprise as Admiral Forrest.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, this is true. So say if somebody has seen Enterprise for whatever reason instead of Voyager, you could say, hey, guess who that guy is?
Okay, good choice, good choice. I like that episode, and I know some people aren't a big fan of season one, but I really like going back to season one and seeing all these people young and new and green and brash and everything like that. And I think that's definitely one of the best season one episodes.
I agree.
Okay, Lori. Let's pick your second one. It better not be my second one.
Oh, I hope it isn't. I hope it isn't. I picked Counterpoint.
Okay, that's good. All right.
Okay, it's not.
We're
okay.
Fine. We're fine. You can continue.
Okay.
Your opinion is not wrong.
You have permission.
Thank you so much.
Much I've... like Kashuk would say.
Yeah, wonderful.
Prax!
You do that so well.
That is going to become, that should become a meme or a theme in To the Journey, whatever Counterpoint
it needs
is brought
to be a soundbite.
We just bring in him screaming Prax.
There you go.
Yes.
Do it. Make it happen.
Prax!
Well, anyway, I chose it because it's such a good cat and mouse story. You just never know who's coming from which direction and will they or won't they? What's going on? You don't know what's going on even at the end. I think it just holds your attention. I liked it just from the first go around. And I think I watched it 4 or 5 times. And I guess this will say how dumb I am. But I watched it 4 or 5 times before I thought, well, did, huh? What? And every time I saw something different. I don't know. That's why I chose it.
I think that's a good testament to how good that story is. It's got a lot of layers to it.
It does. It really does.
You're not going to absorb the whole thing in just one sitting and move on. That is when you need to rewatch, and then you're going to find all sorts of little things that you didn't see the first time.
Mm-hmm. But I think for somebody who's watching it and they've never seen Trek before, if they're watching it, they could just go, oh, that's a nice mystery story. Wow.
True. Or they're going to get so lured in.
Yeah.
Like, wow. Okay. This is good.
Yeah.
I want to watch more of this.
This is pure out amazing. I want to see
this. This was
more.
Also one of Kate Mulgrew's favorite episodes because she said that it brought about the scientist of Captain Catherine Janeway, which we don't always get to see the scientist of Janeway. We always get to see the captain, of course, but sometimes it's not always combined. And I thought she was right with this one, that she was able to be a diplomat and a captain, as well as a scientist who thought about, problems in a 3D.
Yeah. In fact, I would say this is one of the few episodes where she actually has a pretty decent balance of all three of those aspects.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A lot of time one overpowers the other.
Yes, that's true. Like, sometimes you can get top-heavy with personalities, especially in Voyager. There's certain times when we're like, okay, this is Tom Paris when he is a good husband, but this is going to be Tom Paris when he's a bad husband, or Tom Paris when he's a flyboy, or Tom Paris when he is a reckless, Starfleet officer. You know, it's like he's all of those things combined, but yet it's like, no, we're going to focus on just one aspect of him in this one.
Yeah, they take one little thing and then blow it up for an episode.
They do. Yeah, they do.
Okay, well, so I guess that falls onto me, and thankfully I have a different one. And the one that I would show this fictional friend of mine, or this hypothetical friend of mine, because not all my friends are fictional.
Just some of them, right?
Just most of them, actually.
It's okay,
and the next
one
I would show them tonight or that night would be Life Signs. I know we weren't supposed to pick, just best episodes, and this is indeed one of the best episodes of Star Trek Voyager, in my opinion, but it's just such a good character episode of the Doctor, and the Doctor is definitely one of the most favorite characters of the show by fans, and I feel like this shows us just like how Eye of the Needle showed his burgeoning personality and his treatment of the crew. This one shows him finding his own personality and also his own romantic personality along with that. And also it shows some of the friction from the crew. Even if it was fake, the person won't know this at the beginning between Chakotay and Tom, and how people are stranded out there and they don't feel like they fit in. And it's... Again, it's a recurring theme, but great sci-fi where, okay, this woman's body is degrading, and so let's create her a holographic body, and then we have this ethical quandary of what to do or what not to do, like live in this fake body for a couple more days or live the rest of her life, morbidly disfigured. And I just can't pass that up. I mean, like, you start with Blink of an Eye, which is just great sci-fi, but no real character development on the Voyager crew, and then you like dig deep with Life Signs and show them, no, this is what Voyager can be. Like, this can be deep emotional stuff. So that's why I chose this one. Mm-hmm. Why did you guys like it?
Yeah, basically for the same reasons you stated there. It's such a great kind of contemplative piece to make you think about things happening in the real world and how we treat people who are disfigured or have a deformity, something of that nature, or even just people who feel ugly.
Yeah.
You could even extend it to that. It has so much commentary. It's very rich in that. And it is one of the best Voyager episodes, and I think highly overlooked, too.
It is, yeah. I agree with you. It's just such a heartbreaking episode, too, in so many ways.
It is.
From what you said, and I didn't even think about the way we treat people who are different. I didn't even think about that, but I thought about it from the aspect of the doctor, of falling in love and not even realizing that's what you're doing. And then when you do realize that's what you're doing, you realize this isn't going to work. That breaks your heart.
It does. That is a heartbreaker. And gosh, everybody's had that unrequited love experience, right?
Oh, gosh, yes.
Do you want to be with that person that you know you just can't have?
Mm-mm. Yeah, it's there's so many great, like, not only do you have something where you can relate, like, with the unrequited love, but you have a lot of funny moments as well. Like, when he comes on to her for the first time.
Yes.
And it's just so blatant about it.
Yes.
And parking.
And also, parking. Yeah. And also, thankfully, because of the episode Think Tank, we now know that Dinara is healthy and happy.
Yeah.
Because she's been cured.
Yes, the phage is no more.
That's
cool. Phage is no more. Okay, so onward to round three. This is going by fast, people. So, Char.
I think I'm going to go with Someone to Watch Over Me. Because speaking of unrequited love.
Holy moly,
when the doctor realizes he has feelings for Seven while he's giving her dating lessons. It's so cute, so heartbreaking, so well done. It's such a great story. You can figure out that, okay, the doctor is a holographic, non-corporeal life form. You can figure out that Seven is, you know, not quite human. Something has happened to her. You don't have to know the full history of the Borg or anything like that to understand everybody's backstory. You can just fall in love with them and watch it happen.
Mm.
It's just a good story.
And this is also the episode that gives us one of the greatest lines in Voyager history. How the hell do you know when we're having intimate relations? There's no one on Deck 9, Section 12 who doesn't know when you're having intimate relations.
Yes. Yes, we get that. And that is an absolutely wonderful line.
Class. Oh, all the way.
So fantastic.
We have these interesting aliens and they're... they're having, like, all these different kind of food sampling parties, basically. And that's kind of fun, too.
Yeah.
It was very... I never really liked that subplot of the visiting diplomats from another race, like overdoing it with, you know, like, alcohol and sweets and everything like that. It just came off as annoying to me. But, like, the beauty of the Dr. Seven relationship completely overpowered whatever negative feelings I had for the B-plot. I guess one reason why I didn't like it is because it was very reminiscent of a TNG episode where Deanna had to deal with that person. And he was just obsessed with trying everything on the menu and she had to deal with them. And it was just like everyone had to deal with their own diplomat and they were all very, very trying. I love this was definitely a very good Seven episode. And we're definitely having a recurring theme of doctor-centered episodes.
Oh, yeah, this is true. Well, not only that, but we do get to hear them sing, too.
Oh,
so if you're into that, it's cute.
It is. It is. Kind of schmoopy.
Schmoopy. All right, Lori.
Now I'm thinking Seinfeld.
Let's get your third schmoopy choice.
Oh, it's not so schmoopy, really. But it's still a doctor episode. It really is.
Oh, jeez.
I picked Living Witness because I thought, people can always relate to If you know anything about history, whoever's telling the story always slants history in their direction. So yeah. If you come to the story with that in mind, then it's very understandable what's happening in this episode. The fact that they find just these little bitty pieces of technology and they go, oh, okay, well, the ship was a battleship and they killed all these people and they were horrible people. And the doctor has to set them straight. And then the fact that he has to realize that everybody's gone. He's left behind. He's always going to be that way.
Yeah.
The fact, like, he's like Data in the way that everybody's going to die, but he'll still be around. It's just, yeah, I like that.
That was a pretty good story. I thought about this one, actually, and then I thought, this one is so much about what the characters were not. I mean, the people we saw on screen were not the characters we know and love. I think to introduce somebody, you're walking a fine line. I mean, the message comes through toward the end, but I was on the fence about this.
I had the same reservations with that episode. I mean, I feel like given the proper amount of prep, the person could really appreciate this, but I like the only reason why I didn't pick this one is because I'd be scared. I would have to say, okay, this is funny because Captain Janeway isn't like this.
Right. Yeah, you know, I don't see someone new would understand it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But I mean, if you're doing what I'm doing, like, okay, this is your third episode of
right,
the night.
Right.
You know, that would you would definitely be able to do something like that.
That would be different.
By then you would have more of a taste. Yeah, you'd know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, by then you would know.
I love at the end of the episode when they talk about the doctor, how it was all just a simulation of a simulation.
Right.
And they talk about how the doctor left to find his old crew, and they use an old UPN promo photo.
That's cool.
I absolutely love that they did that. Like, really? You couldn't have just used... Like, you couldn't have just taken a picture of him on the set and then used that. No, you had to use a UPN promotional photo that's been plastered all over Entertainment Weekly. Okay, well, to wrap up the show and this night of Voyager watching with your hypothetical friend, and as I stated before, this is the third episode I would show this person, and that would be Killing Game.
Okay.
Okay.
I love this episode, and the reason why it's my third pick is because I'm cheating because it's a double episode, and...
It's okay, I cheated too.
I feel like after blink of an eye, you get to see how the crew reacts to a interesting sci-fi situation without having to know anything about the crew. Then you get into Life Signs, where you have a great emotional... and character-driven story. And then you have the Killing Game. Once you know the characters, you get an action-based episode. So you have great sci-fi, you have emotional depth, and then you have great action. And I feel like this would give a nice round, kind of a nice symmetry to the Voyager experience all in one night. And I just felt like Killing Game had such funny moments from all the characters, and also interesting moments, and you don't have to know their entire life story, but you now know the essence of the characters seeing the two episodes before. And I mean, whether you're a history buff or not, we've all learned about World War II, and I just find it so fascinating to see kind of you can't call this alternate history like they did in Enterprise, but it's just like, what would happen if these people were thrust into that scenario. Mm-hmm. And also you get to see Neelix as a Klingon, which is always great.
Oh, that was class.
That's true. Neelix really shines getting along with the Klingons and getting drunk with them.
He did.
That was probably one of my favorite moments.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
I didn't think about this one, Tristan, but considering what you did with your arc, that I really like the way you did that. It's kind of well-rounded package of samples, basically, of what is the best of Voyager.
Yeah. The Whitman sampler of Voyager.
There you go!
We have a title!
Yay! Good job, Lori.
Fan-frickin-tastic. Okay.
Definitely.
All right, so now, no, we can't end a three-piece Star Trek Voyager picking episode without talking about the honorable mentions.
Totally.
And so, Char, Lori, I know you guys are just chock full of honorable mentions. So just like, let's give a quick bonus round bullet point version of this ending of the show.
There you go.
Okay. All right. Well, you know what? Now that I know the strategy you took, Tristan, I would steal that. And one thing I would do, I know, I'm such a little thief. I would include a really in-depth character episode, and I would go with faces.
Oh, yeah.
Because it doesn't get any better than that.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I had to think for a second. I was like, for some reason, I was like, masks? That's the wrong series.
That's not a good episode.
Oh, that's terrible.
That wasn't a good episode at all.
No, I wouldn't show that to a first-timer. Lori, what's your honorable mention?
I picked Year of Hell as my honorable mention because I thought, what a really good episode. And it's just kind of like a bottle. You know, you hit the reset button there at the end, but you get to see how everybody acts and reacts and in such a horrible situation. Yeah.
Okay. My next one is Shattered. Because it's kind of a roundabout introduction.
Yeah.
You get to see some little snippets of what happened before in a season 7 episode, but you don't learn everything, and I just wonder if it would pique enough curiosity in a new viewer to want to go back and watch all the other ones.
That's a really good idea. That is a fantastic idea for this, because it's kind of the it's kind of my take. Like, whenever I want to introduce somebody on Deep Space Nine, I say start with season 4. It's a great way to start Deep Space Nine, because that way when Worf comes on board, Worf is kind of the audience. They reintroduce the characters, and then you get to see everything through his eyes. And then you're like, hey, I want to go back and see everything that they're talking about, because I get 3 more seasons after I finish. And so Shattered is kind of like a microcosm of that, where it introduces you to all these different types of episodes and all these different storylines, and you're like, oh, holy crap, no, I want to go and see all those. That's a great pick.
That should have been my third pick.
I was like, why on earth didn't you pick that?
No, I'm just not thinking. I agonized over these, you guys. I really did. I was nitpicking my choices to death. I probably overthought it. But Lori, what is another honorable mention you've got?
You've covered mine. You covered it. So it's cool.
All right. I got
a
couple
more.
I have one. What do you got?
I actually have one. I don't normally contribute to the honorable mentions, but this one I do. It's Lineage.
Good one.
Yes. Just how you brought in faces, I kind of want to bring in the different side of B'Elanna. And I feel like it gives some great character depth and character backstory, which Voyager is kind of... gets blamed a lot for not exploring to its fullest potential, and this is kind of showcases. No, they can do it. They don't do it that often, but when they do it well. and also, I mean, it gets Roxanne Dawson to show off her acting chops, which is always a good episode.
She's brilliant in both of these episodes. My only reservation with Lineage would be, would my potential audience mate here, would they want to explore daddy issues or not? Whereas with faces, it's much more the battling the voices inside her head. Basically, I find that more interesting than Lineage, but they're both really good episodes. Yeah.
All right. So, okay. Char, do you have one more honorable mention to wrap
up
the show?
I've got more than one, but I'll pick one. Well, dang it. Okay, I'll say one thing really quickly, briefly gloss over it, and go to another real choice. I think to make things really simple, if you're absolutely stuck, start at the beginning, show them Caretaker.
Yeah.
Where else to start but the beginning? Go for that. Or if you prefer, one thing I found kind of as far as a really good social commentary episode was Death Wish.
That's a good one.
If you're introducing a Trek fan to Voyager, they're going to remember Q.
Yeah.
But
if you're introducing a non-Trek fan, they might be completely lost with the continuum.
It's true. This is why it didn't make my top 3.
Gotcha.
So I would, depending on who that person would be, if they're aware of who Q is and kind of what goes on in the continuum, this would be a great one to introduce them to Voyager, but a non-fan completely, no, I'd space it.
All right. Well, I think we got some great 1-3 choices, and we got some great honorable mentions as well. I mean, this just goes to show you have a plethora of choices whenever you are trying to introduce Voyager. And I hope that we helped you out in this hypothetical situation that probably you're going through, because every single Star Trek fan has tried to spread the good news and have their friend adopt the Star Trek personality and persona and way of life as we lead it. We want to thank everyone for listening, and please, when you listen, if you like it, give us an iTunes review.
If you do that, hey, let us know that you stopped by and did that, and we will say gracias.
So please, tune in next week as we talk about Janeway's treatment of the Prime Directive. This was submitted by Chris Cates, and I feel like this could be a really rich and juicy area to talk about, because every captain has either bent or broke the Prime Directive, and we're going to gauge just how much Janeway has done away with the Prime Directive. So, thank you very much for listening, and this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!